me, one of the people we interviewed said, you know, I appreciate the way that you approached me. I've had media come up and shove a microphone in my face and I didn't appreciate it. And I appreciate the conversation we're having right now. And she was much more willing to tell me more and be very passionate, very open, because we had just simply approached her with the level of respect she deserved. So that was a really fulfilling experience. It was a very hard experience as well.
Thank you all for joining us. Thank you for connecting with us today, the future journalists that are going to tell us the stories that really matter. Thank you for being here. And we are going to close the show as we always do. So I'm going to kick it to you, Ms. George.
In the words of Dr. Joy Lewis, may the revolution be healing.
This is Bearing Witness.
This has been Bearing Witness with Anthony and Georgia, a part of the Racial Reckoning Project, The Arc of Justice, a journalism project created and supported by AMPRS, Diverse Radio for Minnesota's Communities, KMLJ Radio, and the Minnesota Humanities Center, with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.
KBOO Portland.
Want an impactful way to volunteer for KBOO? Believe in KBOO's values of peace, justice, democracy, human rights, multiculturalism, environmentalism, freedom of expression, and social change? Then apply to be a member of the KBOO Board of Directors. Our KBOO Board guides our strategic work and represents the interests and visions of all our members. There is a time commitment of about 15 hours a month for all board members, and you must be a KBOO member. To apply, go to kboo.fm and fill out an application. If you need a paper copy mailed to you, call the station or email applicationboard@kboo.org. That's one word, applicationboard@kboo.org. The deadline to apply is July 25th, 2021.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Welcome to Labor Radio. I am Michael Cathcart.
And I'm Elliot Gilliland.
Thank you so much for joining us. Just quickly before we jump into our show, we would like to give a special thanks and shout out to the Labor Radio Podcast Network for hosting podcasted versions of our show each month. So be sure to check that out at laborradionetwork.org. You can hear this episode as well as many of our other podcasted episodes from previous months and a litany of other great labor-related podcasts. Be sure to check that out, laborradionetwork.org. And now on to the meat of our show today. If you are in any way a regular listener of the Third Monday Labor Radio, or even just someone who is in the labor movement or aware of labor issues, you will no doubt be aware of the PRO Act, which is a sweeping bill that is meant to strengthen unions and make it easier for workers to organize. It stands for the Protecting the Right to Organize Act, shorthand as PRO Act. The PRO Act has a number of provisions in it, but its biggest thing is to basically strengthen workers' ability to join unions and form unions, and to strengthen the government's recourse to go against employers who prevent people from workers from joining unions. The PRO Act itself has already at this point passed, been approved and passed by the Democrats in the House, but it is essentially dead in the water in the Senate, because it would undoubtedly be filibustered by Senate Republicans if we were brought to the floor for a vote. So it is one of the things that President Biden campaigned on. He said he wanted to pass the PRO Act. Labor unions and labor organizers around the country have been pushing for the passage of the PRO Act for a long time. Senator Bernie Sanders, when he ran for president, also ran on the PRO Act. So it is across the board supported by, you know, the more centrist side of labor supporters and the more, you know, left-wing side of it. So it is broadly supported by by labor and by progressives across the board. But as I said, yeah, it is basically dead in the water in the Senate, as it is, as it stands as a full bill. But we have some good news to bring about this week. The aforementioned Senator Bernie Sanders, who happens to be the chairman of the Senate Budget Committee, confirmed in a press conference last week that some of the provisions of the PRO Act will, in fact, be included in the new budget reconciliation bill that has been passed out of committee by the Budget Committee and was now going to go to a vote on the Senate floor. So that is huge news. It is, at this point, not yet known exactly which provisions of the PRO Act will be included in this reconciliation bill, but by virtue of the fact that it is a bill that has gone through the reconciliation process, that in fact means that really the only things that can be brought up or can be added to it in that point, in that moment, in the reconciliation moment, are things that are proposals that are related to the raising of and spending of money. So that limits what elements of the PRO Act it could likely be, that could likely be included in this. And so we're just gonna go in and talk about some of the things that it could potentially be, that could potentially be included in it, and some of the things that may end up meaning that it are excluded from the reconciliation bill. Just a little bit more background though, quickly before we go into that though. Senator Sanders had initially put forward a $6 trillion proposal for this reconciliation budget bill, but that of course got pared way, way down. And so we are at a $3.5 trillion mark right now for this budget bill. The bill, along with, you know, the basic funding of government and the things, the elements of the PRO Act that we will go into, there are a number of other exciting progressive elements to this bill, including provisions to expand Medicare coverage, mm-hmm. Tackle the climate crisis, increase taxation on the wealthy and corporations, among many other things. And the Medicare expansion that will be involved means that Medicare will expand to cover glasses, dental care, and hearing aids, and it will lower prescription drug costs, which is a major thing that candidate Sanders ran on for both campaigns for president. So getting that in there is a huge win for the progressive movement. As I mentioned, this is a $3.5 trillion bill, and you know, although that may seem, you know, obviously that is lower than the $6 trillion mark, it is still a massive spending bill that incorporates a lot of things in that. And so, yeah, we're just going to go quickly into what things could potentially be involved or included in the bill that would come from the provisions of the PRO Act. The Communication Workers of America, the union representing communication workers, they recently released an analysis of the budget bill that identified four major PRO Act provisions that could potentially be included in the reconciliation process. The first one of those, it would be the allowing of union dues to be tax deductible. Mm-hmm. So that would essentially just restore a law that was on the books already that was undone by Trump's 2017 corporate-friendly tax reform bill. So that would not so much be a new thing as just restoring a protection for workers that did exist before, allowing people to deduct from their taxes the cost of paying their union dues. Another potential provision of the PRO Act that could be included in this budget bill would be preventing companies from deducting expenses incurred in union busting activities. So as the Communication Workers of America's analysis report mentions, they say that this basically prevents businesses from deducting from their taxes business expenses incurred in fighting workers' efforts to unionize, hiring of strike replacement workers, and any other expenses used to fight workers or their unions. So basically just they cannot write off their union busting activities, which of course would be a huge win too, because a lot of what drives, you know, the effort for companies to fight back against unions is is basically just trying to cut costs.
Yeah, but yeah. I mean, I don't think that really stops like the Amazons of the world who don't really pay enough in taxes kind of as it is. So wow, nice.
It doesn't necessarily, like, that's not the only thing that would prevent them from it. It's just a nice element of, or a nice little add-on there to just, you know, to discourage them in any small step. A third potential provision of the PRO Act that could be included would be the establishing of tax penalties for companies that misclassify employees as independent contractors, which is a subject that we have talked about extensively on this show. You may have heard us discuss or may be aware of Prop 22 that passed in California that basically permanently allowed gig economy workers to be misclassified really as contractors rather than employees, and therefore not be eligible for benefits or be covered by minimum wage laws and things like that. And so this provision, if it were to pass at the federal level and be part of this budget, would override the passage of Prop 22 on a state level in California or any other states where that would pass. This would essentially just keep employers from being able to, or basically rather establish penalties for them to, if they do in fact misclassify workers, this would penalize them on their tax filings. And so currently the tax code allows companies to continue misclassifying workers as independent contractors even if the IRS determines them to be employees. So, you know, properly classified employees would have the right to form a union, collectively bargain, receive benefits, which currently as misclassified independent contractors, they do not have.
Yeah.
And so that's...
And it might be helpful to kind of tell people, like, in terms of the classification, usually it has to do, like, your impact on the work.
Right.
Right, which you've kind of gone into.
Yeah, absolutely. That's right. There's basically, you know, it means that... as workers, you know, for the gig economy, or for, you know, whatever tech company you work for, or whatever type of company it is that you're doing contract work for, it essentially means that you can, you're not subject to any of, like, the labor regulations that you as a company would have to provide for their employees. So people end up working longer hours or not being able to take breaks.
It's, you know, for the contractors, it's about generating a work that is basically given to you by someone who is an FTE or a full-time employee. So if you're basically, like, contributing to the actual decisions around that work, it can be really easy to be misclassified and kind of said, oh, this is a contractor, when really you're contributing to kind of the actual value proposition or other things about the product or the good or the service, right? So
yeah.
I think in a lot of ways when it's talking about misclassifying is there are people who contribute kind of what one would consider full employee work, but they're considered a contractor or they're called a contractor and kind of being misclassified.
Yeah, absolutely. No, you're 100% right about that. And, you know, obviously I think that as we mentioned there, like, even though the IRS could determine you as being officially an employee, companies will still continue to misclassify you. Like, a tax penalty will probably not be the only thing to deter, or rather, like, it will probably not deter all employers who are currently building their business model off of misclassifying workers from doing that. But it may very well, limit the scope of how many workers they allow to be misclassified, or at the very least deter new companies or other companies from switching their model over from, you know, traditional employer-employee relations to client and contractor relations. So, and it would definitely dampen the spread of Prop 22 style legislation going from state house to state house around the country.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it just makes it harder. Like, you basically have to be a vast VC-backed company in order to run a business model that doesn't make sense, right?
Right.
Like, the Ubers and the Lyfts of the world have so much money from all of these kind of background things that they're able to run a business model that didn't make sense. And I think we're seeing, the kind of the results of that as COVID has impacted the gig economy. We're learning that, you know, there's a reason everybody doesn't have a private chauffeur, is that it's quite expensive and they were kind of keeping costs down. Through artificial means,
right,
getting people used to it, and when the drivers kind of backed out, and we're seeing that, you know, rates across the board for things like Uber and Lyft are skyrocketing. Drivers are switching, you know, over to, like, food delivery and things of that nature because they don't want people in their cars.
Yeah,
these things have been artificially kept afloat in certain circumstances, and this is another kind of thing that can keep that from happening.
Yeah. I mean, as the pandemic has done in so many realms of, like, sort of our economy and our worker-employer relationships, it has really, like, exposed the cracks or, like, the underlying failures of those, like, business models or those relationships, as you just mentioned.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so at the very least, something like this, bringing tax penalties down on companies may just further incentivize them to reshape their business models and move away from, like, the exploitation of their contracted workers.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Yeah, and so there's one more section here, or one more potential provision from the PRO Act that was identified by the communication workers as being a potential provision to be included in the reconciliation bill, and that is that there would be the establishment of financial penalties for unfair labor practices, and to expand the NLRA's, or the National Labor Relations Act's, definition of unfair labor practices as paid out, as laid out in the PRO Act. So, you know, essentially, the PRO Act would include bans on captive audience meetings and permanent strike replacements, so like hiring scabs, essentially. That would also, you know, mean that the PRO Act could fine, the PRO Act includes in it the ability to fine labor law breakers up to $50,000 per offense, and each offense would then be considered a separate count. So rather than them all, all of your labor law breaking activities being rolled into, you know, even though it's against multiple workers, having them rolled into one charge against the company, they would each be separate, individualized accounts counts against you that would then be able to incur penalties against each one of those accounts. So, you know, essentially just creating more, punitive financial incentives for employers to basically not engage in unfair labor practices, which are broadly defined, but, you know, we can probably go into that later, but you kind of know the basics of, like, you know, wage theft or, having workers work extended hours beyond, like, their stated shifts, or, like, you know, not allowing a certain amount of break time between shifts or break time within shifts and all those things. On top of that, there would be chronic labor law breakers such as Walmart would face $100,000 fines per offense. And, you know, so just to contrast that with what currently exists under the NLRA, the NLRA currently imposes fines equal to the net back pay for each worker harmed minus the worker's earnings while they were seeking justice. So essentially this just, you know, because most of the workers who are being exploited tend to be lower wage workers, that means that the fines, because they are in the current layout, are more proportional to the amount of money that the worker would have earned.
Yeah.
That means that the fines are lower for the company, and so there's less an incentive for them to even follow through with that or to be concerned about these penalties. So this essentially just raises the stakes for how much a company could potentially be fined. And as we know through so many other elements of our world, like, money speaks louder than almost anything else, and if you mm-hmm. charge people more for doing a bad thing, that disincentivizes them more than just shaming them or any other element, any other approach that you could go into. Basically those small penalties mean that bosses can treat, like, the current way that it is under the NLRA means that bosses can treat illegal firings of workers for even advocating unionizing, so even just talking about that in the workplace, as a small cost of doing business. And then they profit because the firings have a chilling effect on other workers around them and basically just chill the idea of, or, you know, just squash the idea of talking about unionite organizing in a workplace. And so, yeah, as I mentioned, basically just in the current model, there is not enough of a financial penalty for employers not to just break those laws and scare all their workers away from the concept of unionizing. So this provision would be huge if it were included in the new budget bill, because it would just raise the stakes for what an employer might be fined and might have to pay for doing any type of union busting or anti-union work within their, or, you know, propaganda within their workplace. Mm-hmm. And so those are all pretty exciting. You know, there are a number of other elements of the PRO Act that are not.
Those are all basically only potential things, right?
Right.
That we mentioned those four. So
exactly.
I mean, there's a lot of other stuff in the PRO bill the PRO Act that is not applicable because it's not about the collection and the spending of money, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And so just to bring it all back around here, if you're just joining us, this is Labor Radio, and we have been and will be continuing to discuss the new Senate budget reconciliation bill that Chairman Senator Sanders has said will likely include provisions of the PRO Act, which is the Protecting the Right to Organize Act, which is a major sweeping bill meant to strengthen unions and make it easier for workers to organize. And so we have been discussing the elements of the PRO Act that could potentially be involved in this or included in this reconciliation budget bill, and the way that could be a backdoor to get worker protections passed through the Senate. without having to actually pass the full-on pro act, which would be undoubtedly filibustered off the bat by the Republicans. As Elliot was just mentioning, like, that because of the way that reconciliation, like budget reconciliation, works in the Senate, there you can't just put things like ending right to work in the major, like, mm-hmm. Flashy elements of the PRO Act. You can't just throw that in there. As we saw, actually, earlier this year with the stimulus reconciliation process for the stimulus package that was passed, there had been a proposal in the initial stimulus package to bring about a phased-in raising of the minimum wage federally to $15 an hour, but the Senate parliamentarian, a position that most people probably didn't even realize existed, shot that down on the grounds that it did not pertain specifically to the raising or the spending of money within that bill, and so it could not be included in the stimulus package. And so, yeah, there's just quickly to go over a few things that are major elements of the PRO Act that are unable to be included in this, that will be omitted from this. As I mentioned, the repeal of so-called right-to-work laws, which is a major part of what the PRO Act proposes to do. It also will not be able to include the preventing of inordinate delays to union votes, which we saw in the Bessemer plant in Alabama in the past few months. You know, the organizing, the Amazon plant there, the company did everything it could to delay the unionizing vote among the workers. It also, this new budget will not be allowed to include the enacting of card check. It will not be able to include the mandates for impartial arbitration if they come about, you know, if they can't, so if the employers and the union cannot come to an agreement on the first contract, after that the union would be able to basically go take their case to an impartial arbitrator, but that of course cannot be included in this. And omitted from this reconciliation bill would be the joint employer mandates that would hold big firms and their local franchisees jointly responsible for obeying or breaking labor laws and for bargaining with their workers to form unions. Mm-hmm. So, and yeah, unfortunately, all those things will be omitted from the reconciliation bill. But as we mentioned before, there are a number of exciting provisions of the PRO Act that could be included in the budget, the new budget bill, that would go a long way. I mean, honestly, like, even if a majority of the applicable PRO Act provisions don't make it into this final reconciliation bill, just the inclusion of some elements could prove to be like a monumental step towards balancing power in our economy, mm-hmm. and advancing the labor movement in general. In fact, Senator Bernie Sanders, in a tweet from last week, said that in many ways, the reconciliation bill is the most consequential piece of legislation for working families since the Great Depression. And it is my hope that this legislation will restore the American people's faith in their government by proving that it works for them, not just the wealthy and powerful and their lobbyists. So, yeah, I mean, as you know, echoing the words of Senator Sanders, and as I just mentioned, obviously we will not be getting all of the labor protections that we want through this bill, but even just a few of them included in that could go a very long way to pushing us towards strengthening labor protections and building the labor movement more broadly.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, a lot of this stuff is kind of focused, I think you hit it on the head, like protecting the unions, whereas a lot of the parts of the PRO Act help you kind of form new ones.
Exactly.
We've talked a lot about on the show that basically in the last 30 years, unions have, even longer than that, unions have continued to shrink and shrink and shrink, and the amount of people in unions has shrunk. And so this isn't going to fix that, but of course it will at least address, you know, protecting some of the ones that do exist.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, at a very basic level, as Senator Sanders mentioned in his tweet, like, this, just doing something that actually helps people, you know, beyond just like fighting over and passing a very meager stimulus, like enacting things into law that will demonstrably help people in their workplaces, and that, you know, average voters and average workers can see, oh, there's something that the government is doing to actually protect me in my workplace and help me. Like, that could, you know, it's a very small first step, but that could go a long way towards rebuilding people's completely shattered faith in the protective abilities or the protective interests of our government over working people in this country. Mm-hmm. You know, of course, we have a long way to go, but, you know, there's a lot of positive rhetoric that has come out of, you know, obviously, as we mentioned, the more progressive elements of our political spectrum, like Senator Sanders' campaign for president, But also, you know, through Joe Biden, our current president, like his presidential campaign was built off of him being a working, a friend to labor and wanting to strengthen unions, you know.
And he was endorsed by most of the major unions,
Yeah. And so, you know, like this would be a huge thing, a huge win, and kind of a major first step for the Biden administration towards living up to those promises that they did, in fact, run on and got elected on. And so, yeah, we will see how that goes. But the beauty of taking a bill through reconciliation means that instead of having to go onto the floor and being subject to a filibuster, which would require 60 votes to overcome that filibuster, by going through the reconciliation process, which it's like it's very complicated and I don't think we need to take the time to go through. But what it does allow is that it allows the majority party to basically hold a simple majority vote. And so because the House or the Senate is completely split and the Democrats have the tie-breaking vote in Vice President Kamala Harris, that means that this can just go to the floor after it passed through reconciliation, and this bill can be voted on if all of the Democrats are whipped into place. And I believe Manchin and Sinema are likely on board with this, hopefully. And that means that it can just go for a straight up and down vote, and Democrats along party lines can vote this into this budget bill into existence. And so that is an exciting thing. We will obviously touch on that again when we come back to you next month. But hopefully this, by that time, will have been passed and will be going into effect. And so just to transition slightly in the last few minutes we have here, there is also, just talking about strengthening worker protections and union power in this country. Right now, there is a major active strike happening in Topeka, Kansas. Since July 5th, about 600 workers, or roughly 80% of this plant's full-time workforce, have been on a union-led strike at a Frito-Lay plant there. So in the middle of this country, Frito-Lay, a massive snack food provider in this country, there is a huge work stoppage, a huge strike happening at one of their major processing facilities. This has, of course, led to shortages of Frito-Lay products on the shelves in a time when people are stuck in their homes still largely and looking to snack. And so this is a big impact to the bottom line of Frito-Lay, which is one of the major companies in this country, major manufacturing companies in this country. So those workers who are on strike, they're represented by the Bakers, Confectionery, Tobacco Workers, and Grain Millers Union, Local 218, there in Kansas. The workers back in June voted 353-30 to approve a strike, and this is the first time that that union has in fact gone on strike since 1973. So this is really a historic, a history-defining moment here. The workers themselves, their major complaints are, what you would expect out of very poor working conditions. They are complaining of unreasonable hours. So they say that Frito-Lay makes employees work 12-hour days, 7 days a week for weeks on end, and sometimes only giving them 8 hours off between shifts, which, is unfortunately not illegal, but is completely abhorrent. Of course, they are also complaining of poor wages. The workers have claimed that the last several contracts have only included lump sum bonuses, which means that wages have not been increased. And in fact, there was an employee who spoke with Labor Notes, the publication Labor Notes, who claimed that he had worked at the factory for 16 years, and that in that time he'd only received in total a 77-cent increase. So that's kind of insane, considering how the loyalty that worker has provided to that factory and that company.
And we won't go into his productivity.
Right.
We've done that on other shows. But my guess is that this worker's productivity has gone up more than 77 cents.
Yeah, I think that you're 100% right, considering the fact that even though the pandemic came and ran through this, and it's still ravaging, workplaces in this country, and factory work is a very unsafe environment, the workers have complained that the pace of work and the production at those facilities did not slow down at all. They basically just kept them working in the same way that they had been working without any consideration of pandemic safety concerns. And so, yeah, I have to imagine that the productivity for a worker who has been there, 16, let alone 16 years, even just a few years, probably has not decreased at all and likely has increased over that time. Frito-Lay offered these workers for a brief period, an extra $20 a day, up to $100 a week to work during the pandemic. But that only lasted a few weeks before they, you know, they got their press out of it, and then they just rolled that back, like we discussed Kroger doing a few months ago. Mm-hmm. Of course, yeah, workplace safety concerns are another big element of what the workers are grieving on this. In fact, there was an interview with another employee at the facility who described the factory's toxic work environment by saying that when a coworker collapsed and died, they had us move the body and put in another coworker to keep the line going, which, I mean, it really strikes me as being a similar story that we've heard from production facilities for companies like Amazon over the past few years too. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, just, you know, basic safety concerns for that environment. And then the final thing they're really pushing for is talking about how there's been a punitive attendance policy that managers have really been pushing, you know, cracking down on very minor attendance yeah. lapses.
I think, again, to reiterate on this show, it's not always just wages that these unions are complaining about. And I think when people have an idea of what a union is doing, a lot of times that's what they think. But in a lot of cases, there's a lot of reasonable demands on, you know, especially kind of uptime.
Yeah.
Based industries, you know, like a manufacturing, right? Discrete manufacturing, or in this case, you know, something more associated with food. So these things can get really complicated really quickly.
And if you, you know, if this strikes you and you're interested in supporting these workers, the striking workers themselves have encouraged consumers to boycott products from Frito-Lay and Frito-Lay's parent company, PepsiCo. To support them, they're asking you to basically not purchase Frito-Lay, Pepsi, Gatorade, Starbucks, Lipton, Tropicana, and Stacy's products until a resolution or an agreement is in place to protect the members of the union and their families' financial livelihoods. So yeah, just keep that in mind. If you want to support them, you can certainly find out more from the union's website, but also just consider not buying Frito-Lay until this issue is resolved. And so with that, we will have to leave it. This is the end of our show.